Well, welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark, your host.
And I'm Angie Kinzer. I'm actually the first person you'll talk to if you decide to call in for an appointment.
Well, wonderful and happy to have you here. We are missing our Ken Dilger. It's kind of an interesting week as we move into May. Angie's daughter is getting to do something that not every child gets to do, but I'm so excited for her. And Ken had a charity golf outing. So Ken and I did the show. And Angie and I are doing the intro and the outro. So do you want to tell people where Ava got to go?
I do. She just arrived in Italy this morning. She left yesterday, and she is a high school junior, which is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Her school, she got to go with her Latin class, so they are going to study for May term in Rome.
Yes, and you heard right. She studies Latin. So Ava's grades were good enough. She got accepted to a program in Muncie called
The Indiana Academy of Mathematics and Science.
Yeah. So this school is so difficult that they don't have valedictorians because none of them are used to not being number one.
Yes.
Which, you know, it's part of me goes under that's the everybody gets the award theory, which I do not necessarily subscribe to. The other part is I can kind of understand that a little bit. I guess if everybody's doing great and valedictorian is something that gets you into Harvard or, you know, someplace that you want to go and you can't say that you have that title, you know, a little bit different.
Yeah.
Anyhow, on to you guys. And it was interesting. Angie just showed me a picture that Ava sent last night. She got to go through the currency exchange thing. Nobody asked Uncle Joe about that. I would have told him to get currency here instead of over there. Please always remember that. It is more expensive if you buy it on the other side of the pond than if you buy it here. Second of all, if you use credit cards, call your bank and ask what their transaction rate is because like Citi card, on my Citi cards, I get the same rate that Citi gets when they buy Euro, which just happened to be where it is. So it's a little bit cheaper, but it's a fun experience to go. But Angie, one of the things that I've said on this show for years is when it comes to understanding people's finances, the least thing that affluent families across America understand is the difference between currency exchange.
Right.
I've watched many people come in and say, hey, I heard the dollar's going to zero. Well, folks, it can't happen. The amount of wars that we would have very, very quickly would just be unheard of. We have got a lot to cover on the show today. So Ken and I will get into that in a minute. I hope you enjoy it. If you've got a question or comment, you can shoot us an email. Consider this program at yourlifeafterwork.com. I think it's actually just consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com. Or give us a call, 800-928-4001. We'll be right back.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, there are many decisions you'll need to make as you face retirement, and the team at the Financial Enhancement Group is here to help you. Call 800-928-4001 or go to yourlifeafterwork.com to set up a time to meet. The confusion and complexity of retirement is almost as daunting as is the excitement of retirement. Don't let your fear and frustration of taxes and investing derail your retirement. Call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Call 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. Now back to Consider This program with Joe Clark.
Welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
Very, very happy to have you along. Ken, today we are, if we're going to put the show in a bundle and talk about it, and for those of you that are listening, whenever we do the show, there's five different pieces that are to it. You may only get one of those conversations, so I apologize. But in the title of each of the overall theme of things are things that just aren't really so. So I have a good friend named Joe Polish that is part of a network mastermind group that I belong to. Mm-hmm. And I like to read. I don't spend a lot of money buying stuff, but I buy a lot of books. And you can't read every book that you buy, right? Apparently. And I have no willpower. It's like, you know, I'm totally good in the buffet line to make sure that I eat broccoli, not chocolate cake.
There you go.
Is no problem. But when, Ken, you tell me this is a great book, it is hard for me not to read it, right? or not to buy it.
Right. Right.
So Joe Polish has taught me that you read for what needs solved. Okay. So if you're having a leadership issue, you read a leadership book. If you're having a financial issue, you read a financial.
Gotcha. Okay.
If you're listening to the show, odds are you're wanting to learn more about your money. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so our way of looking at the program is talking about people who have come in the last 20 days. Either you've emailed us in questions or you came in and you had this attitude or this belief, I guess is probably a better word than an attitude. And sometimes it's just things that aren't so. So Ken, here's a good one for you. My taxes will be less in retirement. Now, you've probably heard that before. Your parents may even think that to be true, right? So what do you think over there, is that little brains?
Well, it all depends on how much investment accounts that you have and how you diversified in your tax situation, right?
How you diversified in the taxes, I will give you. Would you be willing to retire and reduce your standard of living?
No.
No. I mean, that's why people work at Walmart at 70 years old, right?
Right.
It's there is this belief that our taxes go down, and it's why people get into so much into tax deferral. I mean, taxes hurt today, and so people try to cure that current pain by tax deferral. And I don't want to tell you that tax deferral is evil and that you should never do it. I've got money in tax deferred accounts, but only because in the 401k plan, the money that the employer puts in has to be tax deferred. So I've got tax deferred money there, and I've got Roth money that's inside of my 401k. Here's what really happens with taxes, Ken. You've got two ways that you pay into the IRS in the state of Indiana. One is when they extract money out of your paycheck, right, on your mm-hmm. on your W-2.
Right.
There is withholding, right? And so that withholding is paying taxes that the computer system, the payroll people, believed would be owed at the end of the year when you actually did your taxes.
Okay. Okay.
The second way is when you retire, many people have to pay in quarterly estimates because you no longer have that money that's withheld out of your check, right? When you were paying into that money that was being extracted while you were in your working years, there was really two forms of taxes. Now, let's forget federal and state because this show is all over the country. We happen to be in central Indiana. But let's forget about paying taxes to Indiana. Let's just talk about what goes to the federal government. While you're working, there are two parts. There is the part that you pay into Social Security, right, which mm-hmm. is 7.65% of your pay, and your employer pays that in, okay? You pay that based on what's called your earned income. So money that you make in the mortgage world or money that I make being a financial planner, that is taxable, and it's taxed on Social Security up to a certain threshold. When your income gets to a certain point, you don't have to pay all of that on the Social Security part, but you do have to pay all of that on the Medicare part, right? So there's a portion of it that's broken out once you reach a certain income level. And that number goes up more often than I would prefer. So you end up paying 7.65% longer. If you happen to be fortunate enough to be a business owner, you get to pay both sides of that. So I'm paying over 15% into Social Security, up to that mm-hmm, certain amount of
right.
money, and then on Medicare, on more of that money. When I retire, when I no longer have quote-unquote earned income, and now I just have income that's coming from my 401k or income that's coming from my stocks or other things that I have, you don't have to pay Social Security on that, okay? So it is true that when you retire, that portion of your taxes are gone.
Gotcha.
The challenge is, when I ask most people about tax deferral, then they're putting money in their 401k,
mm-hmm.
most people believe, many people, I shouldn't say most, believe that they're also deferring part of that taxation on the Social Security withholding, and you're not. When you put money in the 401k, you're not deferring that at all. On the Social Security side, you're deferring what we call your federal tax rate. When you go to pull money out, you don't have to pay Social Security tax on it again because it's not earned income, but you've also already paid the taxes on that. So when you go to retire, here's why this simply isn't so for most people. Most people are not willing to reduce their standard of living or they wouldn't retire.
Okay.
Unless you're forced out of the workforce because somebody outdid your job or you had a health condition, right? You know, one of those two things. The majority of people of the more than 1,000 families we've taken care of over the years, 980 some today, right now at this time, there are very few who would tell you that they are in a lower tax bracket when they retire once they've reached age 70. Now, why is that? Well, at 70 and a half, you have that cute little word required,
right?
Required mandatory distributions, or what we call RMDs. All of a sudden, because remember, 70% of the world does not, 70% of America does not take money out of their 401ks, their tax-deferred investments, until they're forced to by the government's hand, right? Mm-hmm. The reason we talk about designing your distribution is because you have three choices in life with your retirement money. You can either wait until the IRS forces your hand at 70 and a half. I don't like to be forced to do anything, right? You can die and let your heirs deal with it, where they'll be forced to take money out over time. Or the third one is you can design your own distribution. And that's what we spend our life doing. But when most people hit 70 and a half, you've got required minimum distributions. The Social Security, by definition, has kicked in. Some people wait till 70. Most don't. We'll talk about that in another conversation today. But the key thing you have to really think about, Ken, is do I want to reduce my standard of living? And as long as the answer is no, then you have to recognize our tax system. You know, the current tax system was started in 1913, and the average top rate was a little bit above 50%.
Wow.
It was 70% when Reagan took office. It was 90% when Kennedy took office. When you look at it and somebody said, should you tax defer at 70%? The answer would have been, well, heck yes. Today, our top bracket is 37%. And there are some people that are continuing to defer, not recognizing that they're going to be in a higher tax rate when they retire, either because the government changes where our taxes are. We know it goes back to the old rates in 2025. That's what sunsetting means. So we have to go through all of this again in 2025 to vote the current tax system back in or something like it. That's the difference between sunsetting and permanent. I hope that helps. So myth number one is for most of us, our taxes will not be reduced when we reach retirement. You're listening to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark along with Ken Dilger. You got a question or comment, you can shoot us an email. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com or give us a call at 800-928-4001. Ken and I will take a break. We will be right back. Well, good morning and welcome to Consider This. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And if it's your afternoon when you're listening to this, I apologize. I've got to get that out of my habit. I know we listen to the show at a lot of different times, and you may very well be on our podcast. If you've missed part of the show, don't forget you can go to it anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, at iTunes. Consider This program. Also, when you go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com, if you'd like to get signed up to get a copy of the book when it comes out, it'll be available on Kindle, so you can go to Amazon.com and get it as well. But if you'd like a hardback copy, we would be more than happy to give you a break on the price. Just go to yourlifeafterwork.com. The title of the book, Ken, are Critical Tax Decisions That Will Impact Your Retirement. In our world, in the financial services world, we're never allowed to make promises. So anytime you say will, it's always questionable.
Right, of course.
Trust me on this. It will impact your retirement. So myth number two, we're on things that just aren't so today. It makes no difference when you take Social Security.
I think it does make a difference.
It does. Absolutely makes a difference. So here's what happens. We're a justifying bunch of people, in case you've ever, you know, you want to believe your own PR, as they say.
Right.
It's just funny how the human mind behaves. So people will wait to take money out of their IRAs and 401ks until they're 70 and a half, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the real reason is one, most people who saved it don't end up needing the money. Number two, they build up an account size that has finally grown to a figure that they can't imagine reducing. Right, so that you've gone through 40 or 50 years of accumulation and now all of a sudden you have to take money out just doesn't feel natural.
Right.
And then the third is some people are afraid of running out of money. But the average American will wait until they're 70 and a half before they touch, it's over 70% of the people, until they touch tax-deferred assets, 401ks, IRAs. However, according to the Social Security Administration, 70% of people take Social Security the minute they can get their hands on it, which is age 62, right? So I'm 52 years old, so my full retirement age, FRA, is the initials that they use it for. And you can go to socialsecurity.gov to find out where yours are. My full retirement age is 67. And it doesn't matter what the amount is, but let's say my Social Security would be $2,000 a month if I waited until I was 67 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if I wanted to take it at 62, I am going to lose 6% of the value per year. So the money I would have taken at 66, the money I would have taken at 65, 64, 63, 6% a year is coming off of my income for the rest of my life, plus any cost of living allowances that they would have added.
Wow, that's right? A lot.
Now, if I wait from my full retirement age at 67, and I wait until age 70, I actually gain 8% each of those 3 years, okay? So here's the deal. Folks, you've made a choice today. You've made a choice to listen to a financial program. So my guess is you aren't out there driving your car or listening on a podcast because you don't care about this stuff. My odds are you probably do care about your money. And when you make financial decisions, what I need you to understand, and again, we're in central Indiana, surrounded by farms. So on a farm operation, if you're from the big city and you're not used to it, there are these things called silos. And the silos are big, tubular looking things typically, some of them immense, but they hold soybeans or they hold corn, right? And the point is they keep things separate, right? So you don't mix the soybeans and the corn, right? The silos are designed there to keep things separately. When most people make Social Security decisions, Ken, they do them in the form of a silo. They look at it and go, okay, here's the deal. I could die, right? I could die. I mean, it could,
right.
No, you can't, you will die, right? There's another promissory thing for you here on Consider This Program today. You will die. You just don't know when that day will be. Well, the Social Security Administration is the single largest actuarial table on the planet, right? So they look at Ken and I's lives and at your lives as you listen to the show, and they know the life expectancy of an average male born in 1966, or in Ken's case, born in 1970, right? They know what that actuarial table is. So what people tend to do, because they don't want to take money out of their IRAs, Ken,
mm-hmm.
right? And they look at Social Security and they go, okay, here's the deal. If I take it early, right, yes, I'm losing all of this income, but I've done the math, and engineers will come in with spreadsheets. They'll have assumptions that are in there. I've done the math, and I've got to live to be 84 years old and change in order to break even. And what if I die? Or, Ken, what if the rules change? What if they take Social Security away? Because we all know the government's broke.
Right.
Right? We all know about the debt. Well, friends, hear me on this, right? The government can print money. That's one, right? Two, the people that are just a little bit older than I am come from a population we call the baby boom, right? One out of five adults were born between 1957 and 1961 in the United States. They're stacked in a very, very tight group. And those people vote. There's just very few people in that stack of people who don't vote. And you can say you're a liberal, you can say you're a conservative, you can call yourself a libertarian, but you do care about your billfold, right?
True.
And the reason I have friends retiring from Congress who don't want to run again is because they know they can't impact 65% of our budget, which is tied up in terms of things that are required, i.e. Social Security, Medicare, et cetera, right? So you can look at Social Security in that silo decision, Ken, and say, it doesn't matter if I take it at 62 or if I wait to 70, as long as I agree to die at age 84, right? Because then it's going to be perfectly even. And it is. You've done the math very, very well. Congratulations. The spreadsheet works. The problem is financial decisions should never be made in a silo. right? You have to add in those other things that are coming. If you have rental income, because you own farms or you own apartments, you have to add in a pension if you're going to have a defined benefit from the company. You have to add in any required minimum distributions you're going to have to take at 70 and a half. You need to add in any other income that's going to wind up on your tax return. So when we were younger, Ken, you probably heard this because it used to get spouted a lot. The largest decision that we were told we were going to make was the purchase of our home.
Correct.
Yeah. And you're in the mortgage world, so that you still like that deal.
Of course, definitely.
Was it?
Yeah.
Your house was the largest financial decision you've made.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's because he's 48 and hadn't got to Social Security yet. When I bring in people your age into our office and we sit down and we discuss what your Social Security will be and your wife's will be together over whether you took it at 62 or whether you waited till 70, it's way over a $500,000 decision.
Wow.
And I will bet you the majority of people, at least in Central Indiana, listening to the show, did not spend a $500,000 on their house. Your Social Security benefit is a much, much larger decision than most people ever think that it will be. Hey, you're listening to Consider This Program. If you got a question or comment, give us a call, 800-928-4001. If you want to do this on your own, it's your business. If you want a fiduciary, that's our business.
Hi, Joni Michaels here. We know you care about your money, but are you tired of worrying about it? The Financial Enhancement Group takes care of people just like you who don't want to worry about their money. As fiduciaries, the team at the Financial Enhancement Group will care for your nest egg just like they would care for their own. If they were in your situation, call the Financial Enhancement Group at 800-928-4001 or yourlifeafterwork.com. They'll give you a complimentary second opinion on your strategy for retirement. Begin your adventure in your life after work. Consider This Program with Joe Clark.
Welcome to Consider This Program. I'm Joe Clark.
And I'm Ken Dilger.
And we are honored and tickled to have you along. So, Ken, we're on myths today, right? So we've talked about the myth that my taxes will be lower when I retire.
Okay.
We've talked about the myth that it makes no difference when you take Social Security. This one is, it's in the will.
Oh, boy. Okay? Here we go.
So people will show up in our office with stacks of paper and statements and 401ks and IRAs and brokerage accounts, and we begin to have this conversation. And many times, in fact, most of the times, you're dealing with more than $1 million in assets when people come in. Now, not all of our families have more than $1 million, but a lot of them do. And we sit down and have these conversations. And I'm going to try to explain it from my own childhood perspective. So I have an uncle that lives east of Muncie, and I'm not sure you do this in the rest of the world, but when you live out on the farm on the east of Muncie and your father passes away, many times people will move mom into the house, right?
Mm-hmm.
East of Muncie, many times they move them into a mobile home next to the house.
Okay.
Right? And I mean, it just happened my whole time when I was growing up. So grandpa died. And there's my uncle and my brother, or my uncle and my father at the time. And grandma, granny, as she liked to be called, had told me that if something happened to her, that dad and my uncle were to split what they had, which was now all tied up into this mobile home. I mean, I don't come from a family with a lot of money, right? And so I'm walking through the house, and mobile homes have titles, not deeds like houses.
Correct.
Right? So I see the title, and it had her name, and it had my uncle's name. And I looked at Granny, and I said, Granny, you told me that if something happened to you, you wanted half of it to go to Dad and half of it to go to my uncle. And she goes, yeah. And I said, well, that's not what's going to happen with this. And she goes, Joey. She was the last living person allowed to call me that. Joey, it's in the will. And you have no idea how difficult it is at 21 years old to explain to your grandmother something that she has believed to be true her entire life, right? That she's wrong. I mean, I'm 21 years old. I'm a whippersnapper. Just ask her. She would have told you, right?
Yes, I'm sure.
And I'm going, okay. So I actually wrote a will back in 1988. That gave my dad the Cubs, my mom, the Eiffel Tower, and my brother, the Bears, right? Before we had the Colts. And, you know, I would show it to people when this question would come up. And you would hear the craziest things. One of them said, Joe, you're going to go to jail. I'm going to go, no, I'm dead. And besides that, I can't give away something that I don't own. Right? I can say I'm going to give away the Colts. How exciting, right? in my case, it was the Bears. But if I don't own it, I can't give it away. Right?
Correct.
And so what you need to understand, folks, is when it says that it's in the will, only the things that make it to the will are covered. So if Barb and I owned a house, we do, and it was in our name, most of your homes will say your name and your spouse's name, right? And it's owned in Indiana by what's called joint by rights of entirety. Most people would say it's joint with rights of survivorship. Your domicile, your main property is a little bit different, but it's owned by operation of law. So if something happens to me, I can put in my will that Ken gets half the house, but my house never made it to the will because the house is owned joint with rights of survivorship. Okay. Now, you may decide that, okay, I've got a car. The car is in my name only, right? I didn't want to fool around with Barb having to take her back down to the dealership. So I bought a car that was just in my name temporarily. And if something happened to me today, because Barb's name's not on it, it indeed would go to my will, right? Now, in my case, I have what's called a pour-over will. That's P-O-U-R, not P-O-O-R, right? It's a pour-over will, and it simply says, anything I forgot to put in my trust, please do. Right? So the car, hoping that it's not enough to have to be worrying about probate, would be put into the trust. And then the trust would tell my successor trustees what to do with the car. Right? But it's important to understand the house would never get there. So the majority of people listening to this show, your largest asset today is or will be the amount of money that's in your 401k and your IRAs. Right? It's just, that is the largest bulk of money that most people have, at least in central Indiana. You know, I've been to see a guy in LA, and I'm not exactly sure how you can live in a house that cost $1.8 million that is, you know, smaller than some of our driveways. So some people live in a different world, but for most of us here in the Midwest, your largest asset is going to be your 401k. Ken, your 401k has a beneficiary.
Correct.
Right. So the beneficiary says where that money goes.
Okay.
Right. So in the state of in the United States, Department of Labor says your beneficiary has to be your spouse. Now your spouse can sign off and change that, not before the wedding, mind you, but after the wedding, the spouse can sign off on that. But it's a beneficiary designation, very similar to me owning the house under operation of law, right? Very similar to that situation. The beneficiary agreement tells that money where to go, right? It doesn't matter what's in the will. So I can say all I want inside of the will that I want my IRA to go to Ken, right? But my IRA is never going to get to the will, okay? I can have a trust, but if I don't have stuff in the trust, that's what's called funding,
mm-hmm.
right? When you retitle stuff into the name of your trust, it doesn't matter what it says, right? It's the operation of law comes first, the beneficiary designations, joint with rights of survivorship. And so I'll hear people every now and then on the radio. Yes, like you, I'm a listener too, or a podcast. I will hear people say everything needs to go to the trust. Well, I apologize, but that's not accurate. We get carried away, right? Your 401k, your IRAs, you want to have a named beneficiary, what we call a designated beneficiary. And when people say, Joe, why in the world do you fly to Dallas to go learn about taxes for 2.5 days of your life? And I do that twice a year. So I just got back from a trip with 330 other people where we spent time talking about designated beneficiaries, who qualifies, who doesn't, because people believe IRAs are simple. And they're not simple, folks. They're very, very complex. They just appear simple on the outside. And we'll have people who come in who have lots of money, and a legal firm has told them that they can leave their IRA to a trust. Now, if it's technically set up correctly inside of your grantor trust, which is what most of you get. You'll hear them use the word inter vivos or revocable living trust. It's typically a grantor trust. The trust that Barb and I have, where I put a house in it and those kind of things, that's called a grantor trust, right? And there are attorneys who will tell you that inside of that trust, I can have a place for my IRAs to go. And bottom line is, if it's set up correctly, that is, according to my counsel, that is legally accurate. The problem is somebody holds onto your money, the custodian. So in our case, it's TD Ameritrade. It could be Fidelity. It could be Schwab. But somebody's got your money. And the custodian has to agree that that trust works. Or you could lose your entire tax deferral on your IRA and your 401k over a five-year period of time. It's very, very, very sad. And it happens. That's why we go to these meetings to sit down and talk about them. To one degree, it's kind of like sharing horror stories. But we learn things that other people have done so you don't make those mistakes. 800-928-4001. We'll take a break. Be right back. Welcome to Consider This Program. I am Joe Clark.
I'm Ken Dilger.
And we're very, very honored to have you along. Hey, you are in the fifth and final conversation today on the radio. What we do, if you're new to the program, is take the first four conversations and we kind of give Ken a quiz or Angie a quiz when she's in here and say, okay, what did we learn? Because at the end of the day, I want you to get value out of this program and things that you can take away, that you can actually apply in all practicality into your life. So we talked about myths, things that people believe or use to rationalize or justify in their lives that just aren't so. And if you missed any of the conversations, you can download our podcast, Consider This Program, anywhere you listen to podcasts. Of course, you can go to our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. So, Ken, quiz number one. Here's the statement. My taxes will be less in retirement. True or false?
False.
False. And do you remember how? You remember why?
I think we mentioned how much of your accounts are tax deferred.
Yep. And people don't take them until?
70?
70 and a half.
When
they're forced to take it out, right? So they're part of this misbelief is because people don't efficiently manage their money. In my book, I talk about one of the families that we take care of who had almost $2 million in a 403B, had three very, very, very successful children. They were all in the higher tax brackets. And she was living on Social Security. So she was effectively paying zero in taxes, letting her 403B accumulate. So by definition, her taxes were lower than what she paid when she was working. Not because they should have been, because she chose to let them get that way. And suddenly, when she got to 70 and a half, she got the rude awakening of this thing called required minimum distributions and says, I am now paying more in taxes than I was when I was working. And that is a correct answer. So you want to be very, very careful. Remember the fiduciary focus. You are on a financial journey. So risk and volatility matters. People always want to talk about the market. It's not always just about the market. It is also about fees and expenses. They matter greatly. The third, though, is taxes, both today and tomorrow. Do not forget that financial journey. And, of course, fourth is the real return or dealing with inflation. So conversation number two, it makes no difference when you take Social Security. Ken, what do you think?
Incorrect.
Incorrect. I've seen it be as much as for middle America people. I'm talking about somebody making 60 to 70 grand, husband and wife both working, school teachers and engineers make up a large part of our practice. It can be as much as $500,000 in income between the two of them if they take it at 70 versus 62. And $500,000 for most folks is a lot of money. Most Social Security decisions, in my opinion, are made inside of a silo, meaning that it's an individual decision. It really needs to be collective with your other assets. Conversation number three. But it's in the will. True or false, Ken?
False.
It could be in the will.
Well, yeah, but
kind of set you up on that one.
Well, true. Right? You can't give away what you don't own.
You can't give away what you don't own. And that's a very, very good way to put it. And I went through in that conversation and talked about some of my life experience. Early when I got into it, when I got into the industry, and it involved my grandfather or my grandmother, my father, and my uncle. And you know, you can create And there was some frustration for a while. There was no bad blood when my dad passed, but there was some frustration because people didn't understand what it's in the will really means. And I will tell you that the majority of people that that come in, when they used to come in the 80s and the 90s, a lot of people didn't use trust. Attorneys are not fans of them because then you can't probate wills. And a lot of people didn't understand trust, didn't talk about them, or they knew of the story of their great uncle who wrote his own trust and really mucked everything up. And believe me, you can do that. It happens a lot in Benton County, where I spent my high school years, where farmers will write these documents that are just not, that's not the plan. I'm not an attorney. Don't play one on radio or TV. You need a good estate planning counselor. And I always tell people that if somebody did a divorce at noon and tried to do a DUI at 2 and write your trust at 4, they are not an estate planning attorney. They are in what's called general practice. But if you want to go back and listen to that conversation, you can. Just be very, very careful to make sure that if you want something to go through a will the way that it's owned now, because most things, when you look at real property, like your houses, things that have deeds and titles, your cars, usually it's in two spouses' names, and many times that just doesn't get to the will. You want to go through a process that where ownership is correct. And I will give you one thing that I didn't in that regular conversation that I always want to remind people. If you have charitable intent, meaning if you've got money that you want to leave behind to a church or to a university, to a not-for-profit entity, what we would call a 501c3, please make sure that that's not in your will or your trust if you have IRA assets, right? So charities don't pay taxes on IRAs. Your kids do, right? Charities don't pay taxes on anything. So if I was going to leave behind $10,000 to Purdue in my will or my trust, and I have a 401k, then up to what $10,000 would be for the beneficiary, I should put on my IRA or my 401k, so that $10,000 of tax deferred money goes to the charity, not so that it's coming out of the trust. That way, my kids get more money that's already after tax. So hear me on this. It's not me telling you not to give, Ken. It's telling you to give efficiently.
And, gotcha.
And we have a program. Actually, you can find it on our website at yourlifeafterwork.com. We call it the Better Giver, where we help people understand if you're going to give charitably, we want to help you. We want to support you in that endeavor. And we'll provide a lot of education and insight as we do at churches, ballet, symphony, places like that. So the last conversation was, why contribute to a Roth IRA the year you retire? Well, one,
you need income.
You have to have earned income. And if you're going to retire, you're not going to have earned income the next year or the years after, unless you happen to go back to work. Why else would we want to have a Roth money?
Tax deferred?
Tax diversification.
Diversification.
It's tax free, right?
Tax free.
So, Ken, being an old tight end, you want to be able to have a short pass, long pass, or a run play, right? Depending on what the defense is across you and where you are on the field.
Of course.
Right? It's just pretty simple, right? And so that's what we want to do. We want to have choices. And by having money that is after tax, money that is tax free, your Roth, and money that's tax deferred, regardless of what the IRS does or says or changes, you have the ability to make choices. Folks, we greatly appreciate you tuning into the show. You got a question or comment, go to our website, yourlifeafterwork.com, or give us a call, 800-928-4001. Consider this at yourlifeafterwork.com. Have a great week, and we'll see you again next time.